On May 2nd, Politico leaked a draft opinion of the US Supreme Court. That opinion suggested that the court had voted to overrule Roe v. Wade, the previous High Court decision from 1973 that guaranteed the right to early-term abortion in all of the United States. This ruling by the Supreme Court seemingly passes the power to decide on the legality of abortion to individual US states, though this essentially amounts to an immediate ban on abortions in many areas in the United States. So was the Supreme Court right in allowing individual states to decide on the legality of abortion, given the strong moral disagreement on the issue? Should the law on abortion reflect the morality of the matter? And what does the moral status of abortion depend on? If so many parents direct love and care towards young fetuses, does that mean they matter morally, and therefore it would be wrong to kill them? Does the fetus have a moral status merely in virtue of being a potential person? Or is the matter a little bit more complicated than that? Welcome to The Philosopher in the News. I'm Alexis Papazoglou. This week, I welcome to the podcast Elizabeth Harmon. She is the Lawrence S. Rockefeller Professor of Philosophy at the Philosophy Department and the University Center for Human Values at the University of Princeton. One of her many long-standing research projects is about moral status, harm, and the ethics of procreation. She defends the moral permissibility of early abortion and explains what duties we do and don't have against harming fetuses. Elizabeth Harmon, welcome to The Philosopher in the News.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So the reason we're having this discussion now is because of this leaked opinion from the US Supreme Court. I believe it was last month, indicating that the court was about to overturn Roe v. Wade, which is a high court decision that guaranteed the right to early-term abortion in all of the US states. In other words, no individual state could, until now, although some came very close, make abortions illegal. And I wanted to start this discussion by asking you whether you think there is a strong connection between the question of the legal status of abortion and the question of the moral status of abortion, which we'll be talking about today. So are those two things connected, or should we be thinking of them as separate questions?
Thanks. I think it's really important that they are different questions. So I think there are a whole bunch of people who think abortion is morally wrong, but it shouldn't be illegal. But I think that they are really closely connected. And part of how they're connected is if there's nothing morally wrong with abortion, then it's a very serious interference with people's liberty if they are being prevented from having abortions, or just even their, if their access to abortion is being burdened. So even with, you know, we currently have Roe v. Wade, we currently have a constitutional right to abortion in the United States, but still there's a ton of difficulty for women in getting abortions. I mean, now in Texas, we don't even have that right now, but So one way that it matters is if abortion is morally unproblematic, it's a really bad thing that it be illegal. And there's also a connection as far as why do you think, if you think abortion is morally wrong, what's your basis? And if your basis is a religious basis, if you have religious reasons for being opposed to abortion, you can't really use that to justify taking away someone else's freedom to have an abortion if they don't share your religion. You're not allowed to impose that religious view on them. You shouldn't be allowed.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Great. I think that's important as to keep in mind as a framework, and we'll come back to this kind of political question about the legality of abortion and what the role of a state is, or what the role of a liberal state is, especially when there are moral disagreements about key issues like, say, abortion. But For the most part, today we'll be talking about the fundamental question about whether abortion is morally permissible. And I think in my mind, and maybe in most people's minds, those who oppose abortion do so because they think it's unethical to kill a fetus. And the reason why they think it's unethical is because they see it as equivalent to murder, the equivalent to the murder of a human being. So it might sound silly, but should we start with a seemingly simple question, which is, why do we think that murder is wrong? We all agree that murdering another person under almost all circumstances is wrong. Why do we think that? What's the basis for that belief?
Good. I think this is a good place to start. So this question, why is it wrong to kill a person who's not a fetus, you know, just a full-fledged kid or a grown-up? And I think there are more and less sophisticated answers to that question. But I think the basic fundamental thing is that it's wrong to kill someone because it's really awful for them when they're killed, and you're actively doing this awful thing for them and you're violating their rights. But it's going to be part of that story that they're a being that counts morally. So the fact that it's bad for them gives us a reason because they count morally. So that's going to be a really important part of the story. And so some people try to say, well, it's bad for the fetus when the fetus dies. Like, the fetus could have gotten to be a person. And then other people try to defend abortion by saying, it's not really bad for the fetus because the fetus doesn't have a psychological connection to that future. But that's not the route that I go. I just want to agree with people who say it's really unfortunate for the fetus when the fetus dies. The fetus is losing out on this amazing thing, getting to be a person or getting a shot at a life as a person. But then we just have to ask this other question. Does what's bad for the fetus matter morally? Is the fetus already a member of the moral community such that the fact that it's bad for the fetus when the fetus dies gives us a reason against killing the fetus?
So let's go over that one more time. So part of the answer of why murder is wrong is that murder harms someone. Whoever's being murdered is being harmed, and that harm somehow matters morally. And what you're saying is that even if we agree that in aborting a fetus, that is in some way harming the fetus, that harm is somehow not morally significant. And that comes from the fact that the fetus doesn't have what you call moral status, whereas a kind of fully fledged human being does have moral status. Is that roughly right?
That's absolutely right. That's absolutely right. And, you know, it is a really important moral phenomenon to recognize that not all harm gives us a moral reason. And we can see that just by thinking about plants. So plants are living things. There are things that are better and worse for plants. I harm the weed in my backyard when I pluck it out of my backyard. I've killed that weed. That's bad for the weed. The weed could flourish if I didn't pluck it out of my backyard. But there's just no moral reason there. It's not that there's some moral reason that's outweighed by other considerations. There's just zero moral reason there. And so it's really important, you know, when thinking about the mere fact that abortion harms a fetus, to say, well, harm doesn't show that there's a moral reason, because we can harm plants, but plants don't in themselves give us moral reasons.
So I guess then the question becomes, why does the harm in the case of a fully fledged human being count as morally harmful and therefore, morally wrong and potentially illegal? Whereas in the case of the fetus, that isn't the case. So should we stay on the case of the fully fledged human? What is it that gives fully fledged humans moral status and therefore harming them counts as a kind of moral action?
Here, in my own view, what gives them moral status is that they are conscious beings who have experiences, so that we are conscious beings who have experiences. So in my view, it's the having of experiences that makes something the kind of thing that has moral status. And there's a little bit more to my view, but I think I will keep it in my pocket for later in our conversation. That, you know, so we can come back a little bit to this, you know, what does my view say about people at the end of the day? But it's, you know, that where people have experiences. And I think it's also important that when you kill someone, you know, you frustrate all of these hopes and desires and plans that they had, and you interrupt all of these relationships. Like, in fact, our cognitive lives are very sophisticated in our emotional lives and our experiential lives. And there's just a lot going on that there's all these different ways that death is bad for us because we're so cognitively sophisticated. And then there's also just the fact that we're losing out on these valuable futures that we have.
Let me ask you about a sort of usual approach to this question, which is that some philosophers take, which is that they focus on this question of whether fetuses are persons. So it's, you might think it's bad to kill humans because humans are persons. And then the question becomes, is a fetus a person or not? What do you think about that kind of approach? Is that kind of just pushing the philosophical problem and the moral disagreement back, because now we just have to, you know, try and decide whether what a person is and whether a fetus is a person? Is that move a helpful move? Or
I think it can be helpful to ask, is the fetus a person? We just have to understand what people are asking when they say those words. Mm-hmm. So what they're really asking is, does a human fetus count in the way that persons count? And so they're really just asking the question, the words that I would use for that question are, does the fetus have the full moral status of a person? And, you know, we're just asking the same question. So we're all going to agree that human fetuses are human. And we should all agree that human fetuses are living things. Mm-hmm. And so it should be beyond dispute that when a person is pregnant with a human fetus, there's a living human in their body. And just so the questions that we're asking are different from that. It's, you know, does that being count? Does their death count? Is it a morally bad thing when they die? Do we have strong moral reasons against killing them? Do we have to, you know, what would it take to justify killing them? I actually want to mention something that you said earlier, which was that people who are opposed to abortion see it as equivalent to murder. And I will say that's not true of most people who are opposed to abortion. Now, there are some people who do see it as equivalent to murder and who will say there shouldn't be any exceptions ever. Like, we should have laws against abortion and they should still apply if someone was raped, and they should still apply if the pregnancy is the result of incest. But what you'll see largely is people who are opposed to abortion, they nevertheless do support exceptions, that people would be allowed to have an abortion if the pregnancy was the result of rape, and people would be allowed to have an abortion if the pregnancy was the result of incest. Mm-hmm. And there, it becomes less plausible to see their opposition to abortion as seeing it as murder. And I like to think of it as they see it as the fetus has this moral value and there's something lost. And there's actually a wonderful book that makes the argument that I just made by the philosopher Ronald Dworkin called Life's Dominion, where he argues that everybody in the United States on both sides of the abortion debate, everybody agrees that that fetuses have moral value, that they have intrinsic value, and that there's something bad that happens in an abortion. And we just disagree about how serious it is. And the anti-abortion people think it's really serious and really hard to justify abortion, but you can justify it in the case of rape and incest. And then the pro-abortion rights people, they think it's just a lot easier. You know, there's something lost there. And part of my view is I think that Dworkin is wrong to think that people who are pro-abortion rights really are committed to the view that there is something valuable lost. And I think that'll emerge in our conversation today. But I think he's right about the anti-abortion people, that they're not, it's not that they think it's murder. It's that they think there's something really valuable that's lost.
Yeah. Let's say for a moment on this idea that something valuable might be lost when an abortion takes place. And let's grant that the worst thing possible is lost, a fully fledged human life. So in some ways it would be equivalent to murder. There is at least a philosopher who has argued that even if we grant that, fetuses have the same full moral status as adult human beings, and despite that, abortion is still morally permissible. Can you tell us a little bit about how that argument goes and what you think about it?
Yes, there's a very famous philosophical argument that a philosopher named Judith Jarvis Thompson made. And she argued that even if the fetus has the full moral status of a person, abortion is still morally permissible. And it's a wonderful argument. It's very interesting to think about, and I think it's a very convincing argument. And so here's the argument. We'll see if I've oversold it, but I don't think I have. So the argument goes like this. Suppose that you discovered that, so the hospital calls you up and they say, you know what, you're in perfect health, but there's this guy here and he's this very famous violinist. And we've searched the medical records and you're the only one who can help him and his kidneys are failing. What we need you to do is just check into the hospital and you have to stay here for 9 months. And your kidneys are going to cycle his blood for him. You're the only person with the right various features of your blood type and everything that you can cycle his blood and you can save his life. And otherwise, this very famous, important musician, this violinist, will die. Now, what a lovely thing it would be for you to do, to say, okay, I'll come hang out in the hospital for 9 months. Sounds good. But you don't have to do that. Nobody would say that you had to do that. Okay, but now the story continues, and there's this society of music lovers, and they just are so worried about this violinist that they kidnap you, and you wake up in the hospital, and you're attached to the violinist, and the doctors say to you, oh my gosh, this is terrible. They should not have kidnapped you. We feel horrible. This was a real violation of your freedom, and it was not okay, and we're going to get really mad at them, and maybe they'll go to jail for kidnapping you, but you know what? Now we're in this situation where you are attached to the violinist and your kidneys are cycling his blood. And if we were to detach you, we would be killing him. So that would be murder and we can't detach you. So, you know, in 9 months, you'll be free to go and we won't have murdered anyone and he'll be alive and it'll be great. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, and you shouldn't detach yourself either because you would be murdering him. And so, again, it would be so lovely if you said, okay, well, I'll stay in the hospital. It sounds good. I don't want to detach myself. But you don't have to do that. So Judy Thompson says, it's okay. You're allowed to detach yourself and go about your life and think, well, it's a shame that this guy, that he won't live and that I would have had to make such a big sacrifice. And I just decided not to make that sacrifice. So what should we think about this?
So the idea is that there's an analogy with being pregnant for 9 months and that another life depends on you.
Right. So what is the idea? So I agree that there's an analogy, but the first really move that Judy Thompson makes is not to say that it's an analogy, but to say just that the arguments against abortion based on the idea that a fetus is a person are bad arguments. Because those arguments use a premise like the following. They say something like, look, a right to life is more important than a right to decide what happens to your own body. And so therefore, you can't kill someone just to have the right to decide what happens to your own body. And so the real use that she's making of the violinist argument is to say that that principle is false. It's just not true that a right to life always wins out over a right to decide what happens to your body. The fact that you can, so like her real use of the violinist argument is just to show that this anti-abortion argument doesn't work. And her paper, A Defense of Abortion, which came out in the early 70s, is such a wonderful paper. And partly it's wonderful because it talks about lots of objections and it goes through lots of interesting subtleties. It's a very rich paper. It has, you know, the violinist case is such an interesting case to think about. It has other interesting cases to think about. But as you say, there is a kind of analogy here, and there's a point being made about abortion and pregnancy, which is that we can really see pregnancy as this thing where there's a being that can't survive on its own, and the pregnant woman is providing this intense life support. And we can see what the pregnant woman is doing is like saving the fetus from, it wouldn't survive without her. And the pregnant woman is like nourishing it and taking care of it and protecting it and just aiding the fetus in this tremendous way. And it's this very generous, like wonderful thing to do for another person. But the idea that you would have to do it because otherwise they would die is it would be a surprising idea, because we don't in general require people to make great sacrifices to help others.
I guess one objection that someone could bring to that analogy, at least, and I take your point that this is a really interesting kind of example to think about what happens when two types of rights clash. And I think I'd like to discuss this a bit more later. You know, here we have the right to autonomy of your own body, and on the other hand, a right to life. And those two rights seem to conflict, and you know, which one's going to win over is the kind of question. But in terms of the analogy, I imagine some people might say, well, look, this is a bad argument because, okay, granted, in some pregnancies, the pregnancy is unwanted. It is as if you've been kidnapped by the musical society. You know, something happened to you which was not, you did not consent to. But what about if you had originally agreed to attach yourself to the violinist? Can you then change your mind, as it were? So can you say, okay, I agree, I will try and save this person's life, and then 1 month later you think, I don't think I can do this, actually, you know, it's just too much. Does the Judith Thompson argument allow for that situation?
Well, that's very interesting. You know, actually, the particular case where you've agreed to help and then you change your mind, I think there are two important variants of that case. In one case, you agree to help, and so other people who might have helped become unavailable to help. And so, in a way, the violinist relies on your agreement to help, and then if you were to leave now, it would be worse for the violinist than if you had never agreed. And that might be a case, if there's reliance on you and other opportunities for help are lost, it may well be that you must stay. But if you agree to help and then you change your mind a month later because it's harder, it's like much more unpleasant to be in the hospital than you anticipated, and no one else could have helped, it's not at all clear to me. It depends what the agreement is. If the agreement is a promise, that's one thing. But if you just kind of come in and hook yourself up and, you know, you don't make a promise, it may well be that you could walk away. Now, and people like to wonder about the violinist argument. Well, what about, you know, pregnancy that wasn't a result of rape, you know, where rape is totally out of the agential control of the pregnant woman? What about pregnancy that's just a result of consensual sex? And there, I think that the Thompson, the original paper, I think actually has a really good response to this. You know, she talks about, what if you find out that the Society for Music Lovers wants to kidnap you and you hire bodyguards, but they somehow kidnap you anyway, and you could have stayed home, but you do go out, you continue to live your life and you have bodyguards, but they get through. And, you know, that's a kind of nice analogy for using birth control. But part of what I love about this aspect of the argument is that one thing that Thompson is really pressing on is, like, having sex for many people is just a basic part of ordinary life. Like, the idea that you should never have sex because you might get pregnant and then you would have this duty, that's not realistic. And that's not true about people. Like, the idea that sex is some optional part of a good life. I mean, for some people don't want to have sex, but most adults, you know, do want sex to be a regular part of their lives. And it's like leaving your house, even if there might be kidnappers out there. So I actually think that the paper itself has like a lot of rich resources to answer some of the natural worries that come up. But also, you know, it came out in the 1970s. It's very heavily discussed. And so books have been written going through like further arguments. So there is a lot of literature out there, but I think sometimes people don't appreciate how much is in the paper itself that can answer some of these worries.
Let's come to your argument about abortion. And you start by making a distinction between the morality of abortion of young fetuses with the abortion of more developed fetuses. And I think you've already hinted at your reason for making that distinction, but can you tell us a little bit more explicitly, what's the morally kind of relevant difference here between early term abortion and late term abortion?
Yeah, I think that morally speaking, early abortion and late term abortion are so different. Because I, you know, in my view, in early term abortion, and at least in the first trimester, the fetuses that die in early abortions, they just don't matter morally at all. And there really isn't a moral reason against those abortions. But late term fetuses, final trimester fetuses, you know, final months fetuses, these are feeling beings. These are beings that are having experiences. They have good experiences. They have bad experiences. It would be really odd to deny that they're members of the moral community. There are people who do deny that, but I think that's very misguided. I think that they count morally in the way that human babies count morally, an 8-month-long fetus. And so, suppose you had a 7-month-long fetus or a 6-month-long fetus, and there was a crisis where the pregnant woman's life was in danger and an abortion was necessary. And these are completely tragic cases that do occur. They're very rare, but they do occur. There, I think, the argument for why it's permissible to have an abortion is just a very different argument. There's definitely a moral reason against that abortion. And it's just that the pregnant woman's life is allowed to take precedence because the Judy Thompson point is important. It's important that her life is supporting this other life. But those are such tragic cases. It's like very scary to think that those abortions might be outlawed because there's women's lives are at stake in those cases. But it's just totally morally different from a first trimester abortion. And the vast majority of abortions that occur are in the first trimester.
I think you've hinted about why even late term abortions could be morally permissible under sort of exceptional circumstances when it's, you know, a question of saving the mother's life and so on. And I'm guessing you would say that in other circumstances, it should not be morally permissible if the mother's life is not at stake.
Well, I mean, my view is actually more subtle. So I think that Thompson's argument is compelling. So I think that if you have someone who had so much trouble accessing abortion, that by the time they want an abortion, their abortion would be the death of a being that has moral status. I think that that Thompson's arguments are correct, that you're not required to continue the pregnancy for Thompson's reasons. But I think ideally we would live in a world where people would have easy access to abortion, and so they wouldn't get so delayed in seeking abortion for that reason.
So it would depend on the reasons why the abortion is taking place. And depending on the reasons, it would kind of warrant moral permissibility or not. Is that the case? So it's not to do with the moral status of the fetus itself at this point. It's about sort of extraneous circumstances. Is that right?
Well, okay. So I think it's really different, like 7 months into pregnancy versus like 4 months into pregnancy. Or 4.5 months into pregnancy. So I don't really have a commitment to the view of when things change such that if you were to abort at this point in pregnancy, you would be killing a being that has moral status. In my view, that depends on when consciousness arises and when the fetus starts having experiences. And it's non-trivial to say when that is. Mm-hmm. There's real, both empirical scientific work and philosophical work to be done to answer that question. But I do think that Thompson's arguments could make a lot of sense as applied to fetuses at like 4 and 5 months along. I think once you get to like 7 and 8 months along, you know, the burden of the rest of pregnancy is much smaller, and that becomes relevant.
Mm-hmm. As always, this podcast is created in partnership with The Philosopher, the UK's longest running public philosophy journal. To check out the latest issue of The Philosopher, as well as its spring online events, go to www.thephilosopher1923.org. That's The Philosopher, 1923.org. So let's get to the main bit of your position, which is about the moral permissibility of young fetuses. So your argument turns on what you've already told us about this kind of moral status of the fetus, whether it has it and why it has it or why it might not have it. And your view gets quite complicated quite quickly, because it sounds like you don't think that all fetuses have the same moral status. And it's not to do with how developed they are. It's not to do with whether they're viable or not, or whether they have conscious experiences. We're talking here about the same fetuses at the same developmental age. But you say that what changes their moral status depends on what happens in their future, namely whether they go on to become persons or not. Now, I'm sure I've misconstrued your position here in some way. So could you explain what your view is exactly here?
Well, actually, what you said is correct about my view. I think what I'm going to try to do, though, is tell you a story about my view that won't make it seem tricky or complicated. Okay, but we'll see how I do. Okay, so I think one way to get into my view is to think about why my view is helpful to people who feel some inclination to think early abortion, it's not a big deal. You don't need to justify it. You can do it. You can have an abortion if you want it. You don't need a really strong reason. There's really nothing morally bad that happens in an abortion. Like, that's just a tiny little thing that could become a person, but it's not yet a morally significant being. Mm-hmm. So that kind of view, that early abortion, that nothing morally bad happens in an early abortion, and that early abortion is not a big deal, that it doesn't require any moral justification, that view seems to run into some problems, in that it seems to dictate a cold attitude towards all early fetuses. And in particular, it runs into problems when we think about wanted pregnancies and the attitudes that we take towards fetuses in wanted pregnancies. And then also there's another problem about abortion. But so let me mention four ways that the view that early fetuses that die in early abortions lack moral status, four problems for that view. Mm-hmm. So one problem is, consider someone who wanted to get pregnant and she finds herself pregnant and she is like, this living being is in my body and it's the beginning stage of my baby, of my kid. And she just already loves that living being. So this is a common phenomenon. And it just seems like she's not making any kind of mistake. Like, that is the beginning stage of her child. And that is a living being that's in her body. But it's weird to say that you're not making a mistake in loving it, even though its death would be morally insignificant. And even like, it seems like you're saying, well, this thing is totally morally insignificant. Oh, yeah, sure. But you could love it. It seems like we should only love things that matter morally, that are part of the moral community. So there's this problem about love of early fetuses. Mm. And then another problem is about miscarriage. So if someone has a wanted pregnancy and then they experience an early miscarriage, it can really be devastating. Mm-hmm. And it's devastating in a different way from like trying to get pregnant and failing to get pregnant. So like, you wanted to have a kid now, you're not going to have a kid right now. The miscarriage is much more devastating for some people. I mean, some people have a miscarriage and they're relieved. So I don't want to say that every miscarriage is devastating, but miscarriage can, even early miscarriage can be devastating. And like, how can you explain that if you say that that was just a morally insignificant being? So that's the second problem. So there's love, there's miscarriage. And then the third problem has to do with if somebody has a wanted pregnancy and they're planning to continue their pregnancy and they're taking, they really want to take care of this living being in their body. And so they really want to think about taking the right vitamins, eating the right foods, not consuming, not smoking cigarettes, not consuming heavy amounts of alcohol. And they're, you know, they want to take, not taking certain drugs that would cause birth defects. What's going on with them, their attitude to this being, that this is a living being that they're trying to take care of? And I think that very often the experience of that is like, this thing matters and I'm taking care of it because it already matters. And again, that sits very poorly with the idea this thing doesn't matter at all. Its death wouldn't matter at all. So that's the third problem, is taking care, is the way that we want to take care of some early fetuses. And then the fourth problem is about the experience of trying to decide whether to have an abortion and the experience of abortion. It can feel to some people like a very weighty thing. And I do want to say, not to everyone. Some people have an abortion, they're just glad they could have it and they're just thrilled and they move on with their lives. And that is real. Like, I've known people who've had that experience of abortion and I feel really happy for them that that was available to them and that they have their head on straight about it and it didn't upset them. But there are lots of people for whom it's a very hard decision whether to abort, and it feels very weighty. It doesn't just feel like a simple surgical procedure. And again, it doesn't feel like considering conceiving a child now and deciding not to. It feels much more weighty. So we have these four ways that the view that early fetuses that die in early abortions are morally insignificant just seems like it's getting something wrong. Like, it can't accommodate this thought that it's reasonable. First, that's reasonable to love your early fetus. Second, that a miscarriage can be a really big deal. Third, that we really do have reasons to, because of how they matter, to take care of some early fetuses. And fourth, that the choice whether to abort is this like significant, weighty, tricky thing. So my view comes along and can just reconcile these things. So my view can reconcile the idea that the fetuses that die in early abortions are morally insignificant with these four things I've been talking about. And the way that my view does that is by saying, look, fetuses, early fetuses, there are two very different kinds of early fetuses. So Alexis, you and I, we were once early fetuses. And we, on my view, from the moment we came into existence, you and I had moral status. We counted morally. And so we were appropriate objects of love. And we were things that you should take care of by thinking about what you're putting in your body and whether you're going to harm us with drugs that would give us birth defects or things. We were the beginning stages of persons. But then there are these other early fetuses that die as early fetuses. And that's just a really different kind of thing. So that's something that is a living being, and some things are good and bad for it, but it never has any conscious experiences. And it dies without ever being conscious. It's much more like a plant. And so in my view, the early fetuses that die while they're still early fetuses, they don't have any moral status. They don't count morally. But early fetuses that are going to have futures as persons, they do have moral status and they do count morally. And as you said, it's because of their futures, their, what really is going to happen to them, that settles whether they have moral status. Okay, and so to complete the story I'm telling, how does this help us to understand why miscarriage is so upsetting? Well, because on my view, when you were planning to continue your pregnancy, you were reasonable in thinking that your fetus already had moral status, that it was already a member of the moral community, it was appropriate to love it. And then the miscarriage happens, and it's like, oh my gosh, this thing that you loved dies. And it turns out that just you're in a very different situation than you thought. And that can be devastating. You know, it turns out that it wasn't an appropriate object of love, but you didn't have a way of knowing that until the miscarriage. And so just, it's awful to discover that you're in such a different scenario than you thought, and that this thing that you were loving has now died, even though, oh, now you realize, oh, it wasn't the beginning stage of my child, so it wasn't the kind of thing it's appropriate to love, but that's still deeply upsetting.
Mm. I have many questions.
Sure.
Let me start with a couple. So one is a kind of challenge to the idea that the way we feel about, or the way that some people can feel about kind of early fetuses, is in any way a guide to the moral status of that fetus. So one, you know, not to echo that sort of horrible slogan of like, facts don't care about your feelings, but, you know, you might say, what do people's feelings have to do with like whether something has a moral status or not? You know, you mentioned plants. I mean, I know lots of people who are obsessed with their plants. You could push it to the level of saying they love their plants. They take care of their plants. They always, you know, they make extra arrangements when they go on holiday to get the exact person that they trust to come and, you know, feed it the exact amount of water and whatever nutrients. And if that plant died, they would be devastated and so on and so forth. Would we say that, well, because they care so much about the plant now has some kind of moral status? Or what would we say in that case?
Okay, good. So there's two different things here to talk about. So one thing is, what kind of argument am I making? You know, am I saying that our attitudes are making the fetuses have moral status? Do they have moral status because we care about them? So that's really not my view. Mm. But my view is different. My view is I'm making an argument from the following claims. So like one of my claims is women who love their early fetuses are not getting anything wrong. They're not making a mistake. And then another claim is it's only appropriate to love things that are members of the moral community. Mm. And so that's the argument that I'm making about love of fetuses. And so, yeah, you can definitely get off the boat in that argument. You could say the women just are making mistakes. They're like excited for this future child, but they're loving the thing that's not yet the future child. And so we're just going to have to and then mm-hmm. we could disagree about that. Mm-hmm. Now, when people love their plants, and we definitely say it, we say people, I love my plants. I love that movie I saw last night. I love that hamburger. I think that we just use the word love to refer to a bunch of different kinds of attitudes. So I think that like the sense in which you can love your plants and a particular hamburger from a particular restaurant are, it's a different kind of attitude than the kind of love of a being that I'm talking about. And so the claim that I want to make is just, it's only appropriate to feel this like interpersonal kind of love, like the kind of love that the woman has for the fetus, if it's a member of the moral community.
I don't want to spend too much time on this, but I guess, yeah, I get your point that we use the word love in many ways, and sometimes it's sort of like metaphorical or whatever. But I mean, in the case of the plant, you do have all these other things going on, like people nurture them, people take care of them. People would be devastated if that plant died, things that wouldn't apply to your favorite movie, say, or your favorite hamburger. But do you want to say that in that case, if someone does genuinely feel the emotion of love towards a plant, they are making a mistake. They are misplacing their love on an object that actually doesn't and shouldn't have moral status.
So I think they're just two different cases of people who love their plants. So like nurturing and taking care of a plant and finding it really meaningful. That's all compatible with, it's just like a really different kind of love than the kind of love that we have for persons, but you could still really value it. And it does, you know, it can be harmed or benefited as I was saying earlier. And so it is true that you can nurture plants and that's appropriate and it is a living thing. But then you can imagine the person who really loves their plant as though it's, you know, in the way that we feel towards people. And that's like, you know, maybe there'd be a good short story there or a funny little Saturday Night Live clip. But that person would be getting something wrong. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, it would be inappropriate, their attitude to the plant.
I think, interestingly, your position has this kind of interesting nuance, because you're not just saying the moral status of a fetus is in virtue of its potential, which I think is an argument that you come across on the in the sort of community of people that are against abortion, you know, the argument is, well, you're killing something that has the potential of becoming a fully fledged human being, and that's wrong. But of course, all fetuses have that potential, but you don't see that potential alone as being enough to kind of grant it moral status. It has to be contingent on what that potential amounts to. So why do you think potentiality in itself isn't enough to grant moral status to fetuses?
I agree. Lots of people think that the potentiality to become a sophisticated person gives all early fetuses moral status. So it's interesting. I think that part of how I came to my view was looking at what people said about potentiality. And one of the things that people would say is things like, this is the beginning stage of a person. And I would look at that and I would think, well, some of them are beginning stages of persons. Some fetuses are, but not all. You know, and so one thing that I'll say is some of the arguments for potentiality giving fetuses moral status really only apply to actual futures giving you moral status. And, you know, on my view, when you look at the fetus, you know, so when you and I were fetuses and we say, well, why would this thing have moral status? We can say, well, this very thing is going to be a thinking, talking being with sophisticated relationships and, you know, all of these actual complicated lives that you and I have led. It's this thing that's going to lead that life. But when you look at the fetuses that die as early fetuses, there's nothing in their lifespan that you can point to be like, here it's a feeling being, here it's a sophisticated, you know, here is this interesting life that it's leading that means that we should honor this stage of it.
Is there an objection here to be made that we're making a sort of confusing potentiality with early stage? So the fetuses, like you and I, you know, the fetuses go on to become human beings like you and I. In some strict way, we're just early human beings. And that's something that fetuses that died before they became human beings weren't early human beings. But both fetuses were potentially human beings, right? Isn't that like a sort of inherent property that all fetuses have? So it isn't really the potentiality and then plus something else. It's just some fetuses are early human beings and some aren't.
Yeah, so that is right, that the potentiality to become a sophisticated person is something that all fetuses have, and they have that. That's a property that they really have. I think what it's going to come down to is what are the good arguments that that's sufficient for moral status? You know, so if, you know, so if it's common ground among us that fetuses have the potential to have properties that are sufficient for moral status, why would that potential to have the properties that are sufficient itself be sufficient for moral status? And there, I think it's hard to make a good argument. And it, you know, it kind of connects to something that I was saying at the beginning about the legal issues, which is if you want to start depriving people of the ability to get abortions based on something like, oh, well, your fetus, it doesn't already have any of the features that seem to matter morally, but it has the potential to have those features. That doesn't seem like a good reason to give someone to deprive them of a right. You know, and so there I'm switching into talking about legality. But, right. But at a certain level, what I want to say is I have yet to encounter a good argument that I think is a good argument that potentiality would be sufficient for moral status.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think we don't apply that for anything else, right? An argument I heard recently was something along the lines, well, you know, just being a potential presidential candidate doesn't afford you the same kind of legal protections that an actual presidential candidate has, right? So we have no trouble drawing the distinction in all other cases. Let's come to some kind of objections to your position. And one common objection is that your argument sounds a little bit circular, right? It sounds something like, well, if I abort this fetus, it will not go on to become a human being. Therefore, it has no moral status. Therefore, aborting it is morally justified, right? So it seems like abortion justifies abortion somehow, What's your response to this objection? What is it getting wrong in your view?
Okay, great. So is it true that on my view, if you have an abortion, yay, the fact that you had the abortion made it okay to have the abortion. But if you don't have an abortion, well, then it would have been wrong to have an abortion, you know, because that fetus has moral status. So is that what's going on? So it's really important that that's not what's going on with my view. So let's think about you and me again. And we were once early fetuses. And we can imagine, you know, at that time, our mothers could have aborted us, you know. So suppose that my mother had an abortion. She didn't actually have an abortion. So we're talking about a case in which I already had moral status. I was that little fetus. Would it have been wrong for her to abort me? Because we're talking about an abortion that would have been an abortion of something that in the actual world has moral status. Well, the thing is that if she had aborted me, then I would have been a fetus that died as an early fetus. So I wouldn't have had moral status. So she would have been killing something that didn't matter morally. And so in the actual world where I do have moral status, even though I, that little early fetus, count morally, there was no reason against killing me. So that's like an interesting fact. So if you have a woman who's pregnant with a fetus that, on my view, has moral status, it's nevertheless true that there's no reason against killing it, because if you killed it, it would turn out to lack moral status. If you had killed it, it would have turned out to lack moral status. So on my view, all the fetuses, the ones that have moral status and the ones that lack moral status, it's fine to kill all of them. Like, it would have been fine to kill all of them, because had they been killed, they would have lacked moral status. So it's not true that aborting makes it okay to abort, because it would have been true of this fetus that it would have been okay to abort it, even if it had moral status.
But in that case, someone might say, well, and you're granting this moral status to fetuses. You're granting them membership of the moral community. But that somehow doesn't mean anything, because you can still do things to it, even though it has moral status, which you can't do with every other member of the moral community, right? So if you have moral status as part of an adult human being, nothing you do to that moral human being can take away its moral status. Whereas it sounds like the moral status of a fetus is somehow second class. You know, it's not like as robust as the moral status of a fully fledged human being. So what is it? What is that doing then, giving it the moral status? What is it permitting or not permitting?
Good. So what's the point of saying that the early fetus has moral status if I'm also going to say, but it would be totally fine to kill the early fetus? Well, it's because there's just lots of ways that we relate to and interact with early fetuses without killing them. And there it becomes really relevant that they have moral status. So it's appropriate to love the early fetus. We have all these reasons to take care of the early fetus and not harm it. So we have all these reasons not to harm it in ways that would harm it without killing it. So it is a surprising situation, but it's because it's an unusual kind of entity. It's a thing that is so much less sophisticated than it could be in the future, and then it will be in the future, you know, the ones that have moral status. So, you know, in fact, its moral status gives us all sorts of reasons not to do things that would harm it, but just... it doesn't give us reasons not to kill it, because that would, if we killed it, it would turn out not to have moral status.
To bring up a sort of different objection here, it sounds like we are somehow the arbiters of whether things have or don't have moral status, right? So when it comes to, again, early stage fetuses, you agree that it might be appropriate to attribute moral status to this fetus, that I should be, if I'm pregnant, should be careful with what I eat. I shouldn't be drinking heavily. I shouldn't be smoking. But then it seems like I have somehow this magical property of deciding one day that actually, you know what, this fetus does not have moral status because I'm going to abort it. So how do we account for that kind of aspect, the fact that it seems like a bizarre, almost godlike property that we have of attributing moral status to things and then taking it away because we've changed our mind?
Yeah, so on my view, that's right. So on my view, if you're pregnant with a fetus and it's in the early stage, you get to decide. I mean, if you have the access to abortion, which is going to become harder in my country, you get to decide whether your fetus has moral status. If you decide to continue your pregnancy, then likely the fetus turns out to have moral status already. Like, you're deciding now whether it has moral status now, but also whether it had moral status a week ago. You know, your decision is determining the moral status facts throughout the fetus's life, on my view. And you can also decide that it doesn't have moral status. You can kill it. And so you might think, well, it's so weird that we would have that power. And one thing I want to point out is, it's not weird that we can affect which things have moral status in the world because of the way that we can affect what children are created. So we can decide to procreate, and then we're adding another member to the moral community that wouldn't have otherwise been there. But also, you know, the Supreme Court of the United States, when they overturned Roe v. Wade, as they are apparently about to do, they're going to decide. That decision is going to make there be a whole bunch of morally significant beings that wouldn't have otherwise existed, because there are certain pregnancies that will be continued that wouldn't have been continued if they'd had better access to abortion.
Yeah, this is a weird way of thinking about this decision, right? Is exactly what you said, that essentially what the Supreme Court is doing is taking away the decision about whether a fetus has moral status from potential mothers to the court, but I guess each state or whatever, to decide that actually fetuses do have moral status. It's almost like a bizarre self-fulfilling prophecy on their part, because I imagine to some extent this decision is motivated by the belief that fetuses do have a moral status, and by virtue of their decision, they're actually making that position true.
Well, it's very interesting. I mean, just to talk about U.S. constitutional law for a sec, some people who think Roe v. Wade should be overturned need not be motivated by the idea that early fetuses have moral status, and they just are motivated by the thought that the Constitution of the United States does not include a right to abortion.
Right.
But then you're absolutely right that, like, in fact, many of the current Supreme Court justices are Catholic, and they, probably in their personal beliefs, they think that abortion is wrong. One specter that's hanging over those of us who live in the United States is this fear that ultimately in a future Supreme Court case, not this one, but that in a future case, that the court might decide that human fetuses are constitutionally protected, and that as a constitutional matter, abortion can't be permissible anywhere, can't be legally permissible anywhere. And that, I mean, that's just a terrifying scenario to those of us who think this is a very important right, that it's a very important right for women and anyone who can get pregnant to have. And, you know, I'm a person with daughters, you know, so there's really just so much at stake for all of us in this. But yes. So, I mean, I think that the Supreme Court, you said, look, if the Supreme Court overturns Roe v. Wade, they're letting the states decide which things have moral status to some extent. I just want to point out, like, also the Supreme Court is deciding that certain things will have moral status because it's a foreseeable effect of their actions that some women will have more trouble getting abortions. And the fact that other agents are going to intervene just doesn't diminish, like, their responsibility for these further outcomes. But I also want to say, in a more lighthearted way, suppose that I set up two of my friends on a date, you know, I say, Anne, I think you might like Andy, why don't you guys go out on a date? And then they fall in love and they have kids. There's a direct way in which my setting them up on a date brought that kid about. I wasn't the only agent involved. But just so this question of, like, oh, isn't it weird to think that we have these godlike powers to affect which beings exist in the world? It just happens all the time. You know, it happens when you set people up on dates. And, you know, it just, this is true. Like, when we perform actions, we affect, you know, often enough which beings come to exist in the world. And thus, which, you know, which things have moral status.
Since we've brought the Supreme Court into the conversation, let's return to this kind of political aspect of the issue. So, you know, as we've discussed, there are some very good arguments about why early term abortion should be morally permissible. There are even some very convincing arguments about why abortion should be morally permissible, full stop, no matter its kind of level of development. But arguments don't always convince people, and it's an issue of intense moral disagreement that's entangled in political alliances and tribal and religious views and all sorts of things. And so most people's minds are not going to change. Those who have really strong beliefs one way or another are probably going to stick to their beliefs. And so then we have a kind of different question, which is, what does a state do and what should the state do in the face of an intense moral disagreement about something that seems very fundamental, like, you know, the rights to life of a potential being versus the rights to bodily autonomy of women who have to, you know, support the child through pregnancy and then bear it and then potentially support it through throughout their lives. And it seems to me that what the Supreme Court opinion is essentially doing is it suggests that, well, you know, people should decide about this democratically, right? It should be state by state on the legal status of abortion, should be decided by majority vote. I know it's not quite as straightforward as that because there are other courts involved in different states and their decisions are not necessarily made democratically. But what's your position when it comes to the politics of this? And, you know, if we think, you've already suggested there's one way of going about it, which is like, well, let's just look at the Constitution. And if the Constitution doesn't say anything about it, we can't legislate. But what about kind of the bigger kind of question around what happens in a liberal democracy, or what should happen in a liberal democracy when there are issues of intense moral disagreement of this kind?
Yeah, thank you. So, well, you know, I'll say again, it's really important that even if a majority of people are opposed to abortion, if the reason they're opposed is religious, they should not impose that on anyone. It's also worth saying, people.
Why is that wrong? Can you tell us why?
Because there's real, there's a lot at stake for women and people who can become pregnant in getting to have an abortion. So Judy Thompson emphasizes the way that this takes, you know, this is like the use of your body, and pregnancy is a hugely intense physical and emotional experience. And it creates health risks for the pregnant woman. It's much more dangerous than abortion. But actually, I mean, in some ways, while that's really significant, we don't want to just focus on that as why people need a right to abortion, because it's actually so important that people need a right to abortion because they need a right to decide whether to become a parent to a child at this time, whether to either become a parent for the first time or add a child to their family. And it's really important that among women who seek abortions, if they're unable to have an abortion, the vast majority prefer to raise the child themselves rather than give the child up, make an adoption plan for the child. So people who want to abort an early pregnancy often nevertheless feel like if they're going to continue the pregnancy and create this child that's their child, they want to raise that child. And what you end up doing is imposing parenthood and motherhood on people, which is a huge imposition, and people should be able to make their own decisions. You know, there's a reason that the important organization in the United States is called Planned Parenthood, because people should be entitled to plan and choose when they become parents. And, you know, this has everything to do with the oppression of women and the, you know, and forcing women to mother when they don't, you know, to parent and mother when they don't want to. And, it's just really important to women having equal status in society. So that, you know, it's huge. Yeah, and tragically, the same people who are against abortion rights are also against informed, accurate, non-judgmental sexual education for teens and children. And they're also against easy access to birth control. So things that could help people to not have unplanned pregnancies, they're opposed to those things too, which is, you know, really morally awful of them.
I hear all that, but I mean, what, you know, and I agree with almost everything you say, but isn't the argument on the other side going to be like, well, sure, it's important for you to decide when you have children, but it's also really important not to kill people. And I believe that when you have an abortion, you're killing a person. And so I'm afraid that, you know, that sort of trumps your right to decide when you want to have a family. You're just going to have to, you know, suck it up. But so what's the response to that kind of reply, right? I mean, how does the state supposed to... How is the state supposed to adjudicate between these two? Because they're just, it seems on the surface, it seems like they're very good arguments, or they're maybe not very good arguments on both sides, but that there are very strong beliefs about what's right in this case on both sides. So someone will, you know, on the side of pro-life, say, would equally with, you know, equal emotion kind of argue their case. So what is the state supposed to do in that case? I think there's a hint in your earlier point about you're not allowed to impose your moral view on other people, I guess. So is that the answer?
Yeah, it really matters why you think that early fetuses are persons. And it matters whether you can make an argument for that claim that doesn't have a religious basis. You know, and I think that the best arguments that are out there are not very good. But then it also matters whether you can answer the Judy Thompson argument that even if fetuses are persons. So there's kind of two hurdles to impose abortion restrictions on people. The first hurdle is what can the anti-abortion person say to justify the claim that the early fetus counts like a person. And again, it's going to be harder for them to say it if they have, you know, the compassionate view that in the cases of rape and incest, you should be allowed to get an abortion because, you know, they don't really think it's murder. So what is going on there? And then also, how can they answer the Thompson argument that we don't in general require people to make great sacrifices to help other people, even if they're the only ones who can help?
So in your view, reason should adjudicate really the disagreement, right? Whoever has the better arguments should win. So if there were like really good arguments on the other side about how fetuses really are, I don't know, have the full status of a person, then we would have to go along with that as a state.
Well, there are different kinds of questions. I mean, actual governments and actual nations should, you know, they have to rely on the way that their legal systems work. And one good thing is that a lot of legal systems, a lot of countries and have constitutions and legal situations in which people can make a compelling argument that women have an entitlement to a legal right to abortion. And, you know, what's good about that is that I think there should be a moral right to abortion. And so, you know, but, you know, and some people have been saying in the United States, really, we've never had proper abortion rights because the proper abortion rights is like everyone should easily be able to get an abortion. It should be free. It should be straightforward. You should not be harassed on your way into the abortion clinic. There should definitely never be a waiting period, which just makes it so much harder for poor women and women who have to travel to get abortions. So of course, like in the reality of various governments, you have to do it within whatever the governmental system is. It's good that our legal systems, while they're highly imperfect, sometimes they contain the ingredients to make arguments so that we can actually have real justice. But it's very messy. Mm. You know, and so like, you know, some people say Roe v. Wade was decided wrong. It shouldn't have been about privacy. It should have come about in a different way constitutionally. Right. And there it's like, you know, I'm not a constitutional scholar, I'm not a legal scholar. And I think, well, it was good that they found the right. They found a way to find the right in the Constitution because we damn well should have the right. but these things are messy. And
well, they're contingent, right? They're contingent on what the Constitution is. And, you know, that's also not a kind of infallible document. But I was just wondering, what I was getting at is, I guess, this kind of like Rawlsian view that, well, the liberal state should not try and adjudicate on moral matters. And I guess adjudicating here would be sort of imposing a moral view on its citizens. And so allowing abortion is kind of the default position then, because you might say, look, there might be very good arguments on both sides. People are not going to agree about it. There is this intense moral disagreement. So the state should just be neutral in the question. And what neutrality means here is just allowing people to make the choice for themselves rather than the state making the decision for them. And so independently of what the Constitution actually says, or you know, what the majority believe, who's convinced by what argument and so on, it's just the default position in liberal democracies that respect liberty as a kind of fundamental right should be that when it comes to these things, the default position should just go to neutrality and permissibility. And I don't know if that's just a kind of philosophically naive position to have about the real world, but
no, I mean, I think that that's basically right. And that's, but the way that I would, I think that's very congenial to what I was saying when I was saying that if you're going to restrict a freedom of, you need to be able to justify it to someone, and you can't rely on religion to justify it. And you can't rely on like dumb arguments like, well, where would we draw a line in pregnancy? So since on the last day of pregnancy, the fetus has moral status, there's nowhere to draw a line. So on the first day of pregnancy, the fetus must have moral status. That's not a good argument. And, you know, and we always want to worry when we're saying, well, democracy is really good. And, you know, you were saying before that some people say, well, the Supreme Court is going to leave it in the hands of individual U.S. states, and then they can democratically decide what to do. I think it's really important that one thing that democracy is susceptible to is the majority imposing their will in a really problematic way on the minority. And so if you have a state where most people want abortion to be illegal, and then they impose that on the people who don't want abortion to be illegal, that might be really problematic. So they might be imposing a fundamentally religious view on non-religious people. With abortion, though, it's even more interesting because plenty of people who in their moral beliefs are anti-abortion and their political beliefs are anti-choice, they end up seeking abortions. And so you don't really see
an alignment of belief and practice.
When it comes down to it, you're not just hurting the people who don't agree with you. You're also hurting people who have a lot of your same convictions, because when it comes down to it, they will want abortions too.
One last question. What's a book that you would recommend to listeners on the ethics of abortion or the politics of abortion?
Okay, sure. So, you know, my first recommendation is actually that Judy Thompson paper that I talked about. It's such a good read. It's so interesting and rich. And that paper is called A Defense of Abortion. And I'm not really sure how easily available it is, but if anybody wanted to email me, I could send you a copy. I would be delighted to do that. And then I do like that book that I mentioned by Ronald Dworkin called Life's Dominion. I don't agree with him. I do agree with him that the anti-abortion people are mostly not really, they don't really think it's murder, but I don't agree with him that the sort of people who are pro-abortion rights have to think that early fetuses have some value. But I think it's a wonderful discussion, like worth reading. I think it's very interesting. And you know, I'm just going to get to work on putting my view of moral status together into a book. And so but that's in the future.
Do you have a provisional title?
That's a great question. I wish I had a really good title. You know, what I currently call my view of moral status is the ever conscious view, because in my view, if you're ever conscious in your life, then you have moral status throughout your life. But I don't know. I think I need a better title for my book. So it's like to be determined.
Okay, maybe we'll open it up to a poll.
Oh yeah, that's a great idea.
Listeners, and they can come up with something good.
I like that.
Elizabeth Harmon, thank you very much.
Thanks so much, Alexis.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Philosopher in the News. If you enjoyed listening to this episode, don't forget to subscribe and give us a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. The link is in the show notes. I always appreciate hearing feedback from listeners, and it also helps others find the podcast. You can also share the episode on social media to help spread the word. I'm Alexis Papazoglou, and this was The Philosopher and the News. Speak again soon.